Satan that the power of the Ultimate Warrior has spread like a virus amongst the WWF, then let them continue to walk as normal as they seem. But if those 28 normal men want to have special attractions such as Royal Rumble, then you and I, as the Warriors, the most powerful force in the WWF, will continue to see it only as another challenge, only as another day of combat. 28 of those normal men, stacked one on top of another, can't come close to the feelings and the destinations from parts unknown. You realize, as I do, that the 29th man, you, Hulk Hogan, walk with a different force field around you, walk on horizons that are close to where I've been. But no one in the Royal Rumble shall form a team. Every man shall fight for what he feels is in himself. And I, the Ultimate Warrior, will fulfill another destiny.
So we're in the 90s now. So our theme song, Acceptable in the 80s, might go out in the next pay-per-view.
I was thinking the same, actually.
I think we'll just get Metallica and The Memory Remains.
Boo!
Or we get Saliva. What are Saliva doing? They're not
much.
I was just saying to Jay, we can just all say 90s, and then, you know, it was acceptable in the 90s.
Yeah, we give that a go, really.
One, two, three, 90s.
Like. Yeah, yeah. After three, not on three. One, two, three.
Cunt.
Wait, neither of you did it.
Oh, yeah, that's because I
was going like...
Right. We're going 3, 2, 1, silence.
And then go.
And then go.
Yeah, so we're going on the go.
But we're not saying go.
I know, but we're going on the go.
Okay. Right. 3, 2, 1, 90s.
I thought, where's the silence?
Oh, sorry, I meant a brief silence.
All right.
3, 2, 1. 90s.
Welcome to OSW Review, the old school wrestling podcast. Filmed in glorious grapple vision and encoded with blast processing, we chronologically critique the Hulkamania era pay-per-view by pay-per-view, and tonight we enter the 90s. January 1990, top of the charts were New Kids on the Block and the Minikin, Kylie Minogue. And in the video game world, the Neo Geo and the Mega Drive were released, as was Super Mario Bros. 3, and who could forget Golly Ghost.
Have to have a clip of Golly Ghost now.
Yeah. Where am I going to find you? It's my problem now. This is your host, the unjobbable Jay Hunter. With me as always, Zippy and Bungle. Two dry shites known as Steve. No? You going to sandbag me? Steve? Shit. The Royal Rumble, January 21st, 1990, from the Orlando Arena in Orlando, Florida, with an attendance of 16,000 sellout, with 260,000 viewers at home. Alright, so let's get to it. Vince screams down the card. Did you like the nice seasick rowboat motion graphics they had there?
I didn't even notice that.
I was getting sick. Like,
this is Mode 7, wasn't it?
As we're welcomed by Tony Schiavone and Jesse Ventura. Steve, what was he wearing?
A Mickey Mouse jumper, wasn't it?
Like a blistering, white, colourful Mickey Mouse jumper. He says Mickey and Goofy couldn't get tickets as Schiavone sandbags him about it.
Schiavone is like the worst gimmick ever for a commentator. You know, like Jesse's gimmick is that, you know, he's the ex-wrestler, he's the tough guy, he's the smart aleck, you know? It's like Tony Schiavone is just an arsehole. He's like,
He thinks he's too good to put on the fucking Goofy hat.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Gorilla putting on the thing? I can't imagine Gorilla putting on the...
I think he might have done it with Jesse, because, you know, they've got the little banter going, you know? It's only just gone into the 90s, like, a couple of weeks, but fuck me, did you hear, like, the most 80s-sounding music ever during the intro? Obviously, things aren't going to change that quick, you know?
But, it wasn't like they were blasting rain music. January 1st,
or, you know, Nirvana or something, but... the state of this intro.
The Fabulous Rougeaus with Jimmy Hart versus the Bushwhackers. So it's Jacques with a new beard and Raymond versus the Marching Morons, as Ventura calls them.
I was starting to think there's a bit of crowd noise being put into some of these pay-per-views, because the crowd seemed fucking mental the whole pay-per-view, including this match.
Is this the WWE version, you know, the...
No, they were mental in the Coliseum home video version as well.
So, okay, so probably just a mental crowd?
Yeah, there were moments where it was quieter, but it was never silent.
Okay.
You know, so...
God, I'd love to have a crowd like that in this day and age.
So, yeah, we got house show wrestling stalling for about 5 minutes to open this up. Tons of it in this match. Butch bites Jacques' arse, and... Yeah, the ref, what
the
fuck?
He bites the fucking ref! And Jesse, much like me, flips out.
Tons of fucking biting in this match. Where's the DQ?
Is biting illegal?
Yes.
Yeah.
I stand correct.
You should remember...
said the man in the orthopedic shoes.
Yeah, biting is 100% illegal.
The Bushwhackers clean house as the Rougeaus regroup. And yeah, they get the big hug outside.
A lot of heat for Jacques and Raymond giving each other a hug.
Jacques does a nip up for no reason and gets a lovely reaction. And then Butch tries and gets a hot tag and Jacques bumps like a boss.
Hey, it's, you know, I know there's a lot of stalling at the start of this match, but because the crowd are into it, I thought both teams played off it really well. They gave the crowd what they wanted, and then there was a bit of a lull in the match because the heels were starting to get on top. And then the Bushwhackers got the hot tag and it started heating up again, so... I think it was... I was pretty happy with how it was going at this point.
And there was also a spot where, just after, you know, Jesse was giving out about... I think it was Luke who bit Jacques. Jacques gets Luke in the corner and bites him. And the commentators don't even mention... This is like 30 seconds after they just give out about the other spot. And it's really bad.
They're probably just like, meh. This is all they got. Yeah. Jimmy Hart stops the Bushwhackers from doing their finisher, which is the battering ram. They catch Hart, but the Rougeaus save him. Curiously enough, they don't steal the win. I would have thought that'd be the end there. But the Bushwhackers get the battering ram on Jacques into Raymond and get the three. And I have to say, yeah, the characters are over, but this is a very basic, simple match. But yeah, never lost the crowd.
I thought Jacques was awesome. I thought Raymond was awesome. I thought everybody else sucked. I didn't enjoy this match.
Yeah, and you know, I'm always banging on about having a fast-paced, exciting match to jerk the curtain, but I was actually pretty happy with this. Just, I mean, if the crowd weren't into it, it would have been atrocious, but considering they were, and the two teams were a lot of fun, yeah, I was happy enough.
Very sad news. This is the final pay-per-view for the Rougeaus.
Oh, no.
They were on some roll, though.
They're fucking great. They're so good.
Like, did they ever win the tag titles?
No, they never did. Despite every episode we do, there's a fucking new tag champions.
Yeah, like, they're a good team. Sir Ray Rougeau then went off and did, like, backstage interviews and stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
I was like, as in interviewing people?
Yeah, he was just like...
No, he transitioned to behind the mic, so he's a reporter and a commentator for English broadcasts and French broadcasts.
I have no memory of that.
He was still commentating in 97.
Oh, yeah. And Jacques just went on to become even more awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
See you in 4 episodes.
Yes!
Ooh, that
yeah.
quick.
Spoilers.
Yeah, he just disappears for a year, rests, and he'll come back with a new cool. gimmick. And Raymond, he retired due to chronic back pain. So, it's very sad.
Well done, lads. Well done.
Hello. Backstage, Mean Gene interviews the Million Dollar Man with Virgil. Gene gets over Funny Jack Tunney's added security for the Rumble draw, and... There's a good Million Dollar Man promo. He rants how he's done a Rikishi from 2001 to 2002. Or The Undertaker from 07 to 08, going from number 30 one year to number 1 for the next.
Ah.
Nice piece of trivia there, Jay. he kind of looked real down and not into it at this point, and maybe it's because his career had
he
just wasn't giving his all.
Although his promo was very meh, nothing for me at all.
You know, I mean, him being number one, it was pretty obvious that he was going to have a decent run in the Rumble, so he could have been a little bit happy about it. Thought it was interesting. Gene says the worst number is one.
How is it any different from getting number two? Number two never gets any credit in the Rumble.
Exactly. Yep. And I would say somebody won at number two.
It was either Benoit or Ray.
I think Ray. Yeah.
And he gets no credit. Number two is the worst.
Because, let me explain why. Number one, they come into the ring and they're standing waiting for number two to come in. And when number two comes in, they can attack.
That's a good point. Yeah. Actually, so number two is officially...
Yes.
Yeah.
The worst, yeah. Okay. The genius of glory and renown... Lanny Poffo in his first and only pay-per-view match versus...
Are you saying we've no more matches to look forward to?
This is it. Unless you want to review watch Wrestling it, like, Challenge.
Every fucking month I just watch this match and bang on about it.
Versus Brudeye, Brutus Beefcake. I'll give you a little bit of backstory about why this came about. Saturday night's main event, number 24, November 25th, 1989. The genius defeated Hulk Hogan! By count out. After Perfect grabbed the WWF title and Pearl Harbored Hogan in the back with it.
Hogan probably still banging on about
that time he put over Genius, brother. The heel scarper to the back. Mr. Perfect still has his belt in his hand. Where Mr. Perfect, he gets a hammer and he smashes the world title into pieces.
Awesome. Is this the belt that goes on to become the hardcore title?
Yes. Excellent. Very good.
The hardcore title was a smashed wing. Eagle belt.
Splice in a clip of Foley found it or...
You finding the track?
Did he not find it? That was...
Listen to the yells. So Perfect and Hogan are in a mini feud at the moment, and by default, so are their best mates. So here you go.
I think that's really good booking.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
The commentators chat about Brutus's attire as Tony postulates that it'll be the fashion of the 90s.
I missed that.
Beefcake wearing luminous sheared attire.
Well, okay. Let's just break this down a bit, right? He's been wearing this shite since, what, 84?
No.
He cut them for WrestleMania 2. Remember, he did leopard print jocks for Mania 1, and then they got shorter for Mania 2, and shorter again for Mania 3. But it's like, clearly, if this image hasn't got on in the last decade, it's hardly going to catch on this fucking decade, gorilla, you know? It's not going to catch on.
No, nobody's going to be walking up and down O'Connell Street and
their super pants with their little fishnet tights on.
Genius, did you see all of his little comedy affectations? I thought he was fucking amazing. Like, the way he gets in the ring, he like bends backwards to get in.
This was fucking incredible. He's like prancing and stretching, and you know, he walks up to shake Brutus's hand with, you know, the kind of one hand behind his back and the kind of limp wrist and stuff like that. He was just absolutely amazing.
That's the best camp performance I've ever seen in wrestling.
Yeah, and considering that, you know, like Gorgeous George and Adrian Adonis, you know, when he can't even do the fucking flare flop over the turnbuckle, like rated as like the fucking best ever, and this guy is 100 times better than them.
Do you see this guy, the way he enters the ring, he like flips over the bottom rope as well and does a tumble. It's just amazing. There was a bit where he backs off to the outside and does a cartwheel. It was the best ever. This is the art of stalling at its best. This is like Dusty or something. This is like maximum gimmick and character for minimum effort.
The man can wrestle as well. Yeah, and then even better, you know, two of them kind of kick off the match and grab each other's hands and do the test of power and strength and everything. And of course, Beefer wins and then mocks him. He basically calls him a fag. He starts doing the limp wrist and the wail at him. And then to get him back, Genius sprints at him and does a front flip, followed by a right in front of his face. And he's like, "You got served, bitch."
Voila! It's French for ta-da.
Am I wrong in thinking that the crowd start chanting faggot at some point?
Really?
I didn't hear
that. What the hell were they chanting then? Brutus? No,
that's not even close.
But I thought that the 4x4s were going to come in. Thought of you, Steve, and they start chanting faggot.
Thanks very much.
I just mentioned one other thing that the genius did at the start. He does this, like, forward rolling around the ring, and it's like, you know, Ralph when he's rolling down the hill kind of thing. Holy shit, man, it's like the future of wrestling right here.
This guy is awesome, absolutely amazing.
The crowd pop for Brutus motioning for the sleeper hold, and the genius awkwardly escapes, and Earl takes the first ref bump of the night. The Beefcake KOs the genius with the sleeper and works the crowd for a haircut. So Brutus starts cutting the genius's hair from the front. What a cunt.
Yeah, what an absolute cunt doing this.
It was like, just cut some of my mullet off, you know? Just leave enough for Sunday. You know?
Leave enough so that, you know, the only option isn't to go and get your head shaved. You should never do that unless it's a hair versus hair match, because then you kind of ruin the gimmick a bit, don't you?
You know, I suppose every match with him was kind of hair versus hair.
Oh, like, man, who'd want to wrestle him back in the day then?
I contend this is actually a hair versus chair match.
What's a chair for?
Because he gets hit by a chair at the end.
Perfect slowly runs in to save the genius. It's great. And the heels get the heat on Brutus with, like, the fanciest padded chair beating down Beefcake.
Perfect hits Brutus with the perfect plex. That's like attacking somebody from behind with a schoolboy. You know, it's a pinning maneuver. Like.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got the small package. Oh,
that's amazing. I'd just like to ask a question, though. How was the bell rung when Perfect hit Brutus? Because the referee is out. No one's there to call for the bell.
Yeah, excellent point.
Mm. Excellent point.
Yeah, Fink just muscles him out of the way and says, oh yeah, double DQ, everyone fuck off.
It makes me really sad that this is the only match we're going to see. Mm. I was really looking forward to seeing more of this guy. He's money. Him and Honky. Imagine they were a tag team. That'd be fucking great. Like,
I prefer this guy.
Thought you were going to say I prefer the hammer. Backstage, Sean Mooney interviews the Heenan family with Andre, Rude and Haku, who's hiding somewhere in the back. Rude looks fucking ripped in this, holy shit. Mooney stirs the pot saying they could face each other and what'll happen?
Did you see Andre in this interview? He looked different. Is he fatter? Is he thinner? What is it? He just looked different.
I imagine he's bigger.
I think less he got a haircut as well. Probably misses his old glasses.
That's hilarious.
He's actually looking quite healthy. No? Like, no. He's not leaning on anyone.
No? He's not gassed.
He's not gassed.
Yeah, we'll talk about him a bit later during the Rumble match spoilers. Alright, next match, Steve's Wet Dream. The submission match.
Yeah, fucking awesome. Totally marked out to this.
It's Greg Valentine with Jimmy Hart versus rubbish Ronnie Garvin with Steve.
Okay. <It is hard.
laughs> Oh, actually, let me just give you a quick rundown on the build, the massive, yes, almost year-long build for this match.
It actually was not a bad build. You know, obviously, you know, it doesn't get kind of featured time, you know, but there's no denying that the feud has been there for this long.
I agree. And, I mean, it's no Sheamus and Daniel Bryan.
No, really not.
Alright, so this has been coming since April of last year. Garvin lost a loser must retire match against Valentine, so he did odd jobs around the WWF, being an announcer and ring keeper.
The greatest announcer ever.
Anyway, he did such a shitty job, Valentine just said, do you want to come back, like, and we'll wrestle. And so it's grand. So they had their scuffle at SummerSlam 89, where it was after Hercules versus Valentine in that shit match. Do you remember that?
Nope.
This is the one with the seagull, no?
Yeah, the seagull pop match, yeah. And neither successfully eliminated anyone at their Survivor Series, but they were on opposing teams. And so on the 23rd of December, 89, Garvin stole Hammer's shin guard, which is called the Heartbreaker.
Why is it called the Heartbreaker?
He's Valentine hearts.
Yeah.
Valentine.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
There's a lot of hearts.
Sexy man.
There's a lot of hearts in wrestling. He is an unsexy man.
Yeah, he's you know, Kid Hammer like.
So, his shin guard, which is called the Heartbreaker, which he used backwards to apply more pressure when he put on the figure four.
That's a really clever booking thing, isn't it, though?
Yeah, but, like, so Garbage stole the shin pad.
Yeah.
Couldn't Valentine just have bought another shin pad?
He did.
Oh.
Give it back! Garvin did buy his own, though, and he called it the Hammer Jammer.
Which is a good name. That makes perfect sense.
So, Steve, would you like to run in this match?
Yes, I'd fucking love to. It kicks off with Jesse giving out about Garvin wearing a shin pad. Tony says, yeah, but surely this is fair because Valentine is wearing one. And he just turns around and says, Valentine needs one, Garvin doesn't. It's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant.
Why does Valentine need one?
It's what he tore his leg like 8 years ago. You know, it's like Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. with the cast.
Oh, yeah.
Or D'Lo with his chest protector thing. So, this match kicks off exactly how a blood feud should. They just go straight to brawling. No test of strength, no wrestling, no lockups. Start baiting the shite out of each other. Chopping the shite out of each other. And then we actually had a good boxing segment, which I thought was pretty strange. Yeah, I thought Garvin looked awesome with his boxing.
Oh, the rope-a-dope.
With the rope-a-dope. Oh, he's so awesome.
That rope-a-dope, I just wrote down, mirror match of boring. Garvin and the Hammer, I think they're like yin and yang. Okay. Two sides of the same boy.
Oh, I don't
know. Anyway, come on.
You would. So, we get more awesome, nasty chop battles, and then Garvin hits the soggy biscuit, and the soggy biscuit headbutt, and then both men collapse in a great dub spot. Clearly this match, one person has to sub the other person out to win, but both men keep fucking up and going for pins. But Jesse worked it into the plot of the match, just saying that, you know, they both hate each other so much and they, you know, they just want to batter each other and win the match, you know.
It's easy to cover up like a couple of pinfalls.
They do it a lot in this match.
Like, yeah, like probably 7 or 8, you know, up to that. The thing is, as you say, it's a blood feud, they're supposed to hate each other. Why do they want to beat each other with a roll-up? You know, a blood feud, they should want to batter each other, inflict pain on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going for cheap pins, like. Poor psychology.
I think they worked the first spot of match brawling and then it kind of just reverted into a normal match.
Yeah,
despite it being a sub match. Do you remember, sorry, we'll get back to this.
Yeah,
do you remember Nitro? It was Dean Malenko versus Billy Kidman and they had their pure wrestling match. So no punches,
no leaving the ring, you know, catches catch can only.
He fucks him over the top rope in about 40 seconds and the match
Malenko
is called.
Rolls out of the ring to take a breather.
He does the heel I'm leaving spot. Yeah. And it's like, ding, ding, ding. Fuck are you doing? And he's like, oh, I was supposed to win this match just for starters. And
Kidman said no, didn't he?
Yeah, Kidman just not
really. What a company. What an amazing company.
Anyway, just
awesome.
Back to the Garvin gang.
Back to this awesome submission match. Yeah, Valentine takes over with more nasty chops and elbow drops. And then he eventually slaps on the figure four, which Garvin no-sells because he's got the hammer jammer on.
Wouldn't it just be a normal figure four then, which still hurts?
According to the booking, he feels nothing
because
of the shin guard.
But, like, Garbage, yes. I mean, Garbage at this point should be still very in a lot of pain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, in, like, real life, yeah, 100%, yeah.
And how does he sell that he's not in pain?
He doesn't know whether he's coming or going. State of your hair.
Valentine applies a Jesse the Body perpendicular torture rack.
And then Jesse puts it over by saying that this move is really powerful, but to really make him tap out, he needs to lock the hands. That was just good commentary.
Your boy Luger does torture rack. It's like over the shoulders, but his is like one shoulder, so it's like...
Like
holding
a
log or something.
Like a bag of spuds, like a bag of coal, whatever.
Potato man.
Where the hell have you been? Yeah, so Garvin makes his comeback and then puts on the Triple H Indian Deathlock move, you know, the one where he falls back. That was a good L spot. So then we get more nasty chops, and then Valentine reverses a pile driver to throw Garvin outside the ring. And then Garvin gets caught in the tree of woe, and then Valentine spends about 20 minutes trying to take off his shin guard, and he still can't do it. So then he stops doing the move, and Garvin falls out, and then Jimmy Hart has to finish off taking off a shin guard, because Valentine couldn't do it.
There's like two straps on it.
Yeah.
I know.
That's difficult.
But he puts on one in his leg every fucking night. He should know exactly how to be doing this.
Yeah. Ventura says, Garvin is literally measuring Valentine.
Yeah, he's.
Looks like.
Valentine puts on another figure four, but Ronnie Garvin reverses it, but Valentine gets the rope straight away. Bam. Valentine takes a Ric Flair top rope bump, and then Garvin takes off Valentine's shin guard, smacks him in the face with it, sticks on a Texas cloverleaf, and finally gets the win in this, what I thought, tremendous matchup.
He won with the sharpshooter, didn't he?
It's a cloverleaf, isn't it?
I think it was a bit of just... Because I think it was supposed to be a sharpshooter, because I remember it was like, oh! Brett, you fucking stealer! You're a phony! Oh, fuck, I don't
You're
really...
a loser!
As a cunt. If Garvin used the sharpshooter, would it be the garbage chute?
Yes! Yes, it would.
Where's that written? That was the last word he wrote on that page.
Was it? I totally enjoyed the match. I thought it was great. Garvin is fucking awesome. It'd be a sad day when he goes. Which is probably soon, is it?
I have some sad news for you, Steve.
He's not done already, is he?
This is the final pay-per-view of RORG.
So this is your favourite tag team and your favourite singles wrestler. Gone.
And the genius.
And the genius as well. Genius, yeah. Oh my god.
90s not off to a great start.
No. We are heading into the lean years, aren't we?
But I'll say, I completely agree. I thought this was a really good match, and I thought Garvin was excellent, because Valentine, he's just...
Told you he was awesome, lads. It only took you like 4 months to come around.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I hate Greg Valentine. I enjoy making fun of him, but in terms of if I wanted him on my roster, it'd be definite no. Now, Garvin, he does have great stamina, but, you know, character-wise, he's pretty Johnny Unitas boring, you know? I did enjoy the match, and they did give each other socks, like punching and slapping the shit out of each other, but the second they started doing roll-ups and pins and reversal pins, oh, fuck off, what is this? Do the match correctly. It's a submission match. Yeah. Only do submissions. And so I rated it a lot lower because they started doing pins. And
yeah. I still enjoyed it though.
This match was very enjoyable, and that was all because of him.
Mm.
I do enjoy Garvin, but I think it's because it's like, oh, Steve's going to get it. You have to atone for everything he does. Backstage, Mean Gene gets over how the Royal Rumble numbers have already been picked. Perfect comes along. They recap him battering Beaver from earlier tonight with the lovely commemorative chair, and says he picked the perfect number, number 30. In the ring, Brother Love introduces Sister Queen Sensational Sherry. Nice tits.
Yeah.
Nice stars as well.
I'm getting flashbacks of fucking Borton Jr. from this one. Oh my god.
So it was quite a long stall segment, alright.
Brother Love, I'm sure I would have, pardon the pun, loved to see him on like Wrestling Challenge. Yeah, and it was completely unnecessary. What, this is probably at least 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this really was the stall segment of WrestleMania 5. The heels fawn over each other, and then they slag off Brown Sugar, you know, Sapphire. Oh, the state of her.
I've been written down here. I know Jay calls her Brown Sugar. I'm going to call her Brown Sauce from now on.
She is tiny compared to these lads, but she's also huge. So she's a paradox, really.
I wouldn't call her huge. She's like an average woman in her late 40s, 50s.
She's missing a few teeth, is it?
Well, you know, that's because of the crack.
Why is Brother Love's face red in general?
I don't understand that.
Like, I know it's a gimmick. But,
well, know. It's kind of like southern fat, high blood pressure, kind of eating a lot of fatty meat.
I noticed here that Sherry's face is really red as well. So, I don't know.
But basically, Brother Love called out, you know, the perfect lady and someone with class and style and beauty. And then Sherry came out and two of them were saying, there's some horrible bitches around here, you know, ugly, fat peasants. And then Brown Sauce came out.
They gratingly slag off Brown Sugar and Dusty.
Brown Sauce.
Brown Sauce. They gratingly slag her and Dusty off, and the heels don't let her speak until she's had enough and she slaps Sherry. Macho storms the ring.
In the best part of the show, he went to punch her head.
And chokes her. Gets the rape choke on.
And here's the end. He's got the rape choke in place and just dropping left hands.
And Dusty comes to her aid. If I didn't know better, I'd say there'd be a tag match at Mania. Yeah.
Well, I was more thinking a singles match. But
yeah,
actually,
so was I.
Now you say it, it sounds about right. Is there any, I mean, I know, fair enough, Macho and Dusty, neither of them have anything to do. Is this the best thing they can do to get them in a feud for Mania? Pretty much, yeah.
Just choke a bitch. Like.
Yeah.
So Dusty hits the ring, comes to her aid, and Dusty throws out Brother Love, and Brown Sugar and Dusty dance. It's nasty.
And dance for like 5 minutes straight. Yeah.
And Ventura calls her a sweat hog. Backstage, Sean Mooney interviews a stupid Jim Duggan about his upcoming match.
And he spits his answer at the camera.
Who's he, public? He can't say the word approach, so he's like, fuck off.
I don't have to approach anything any differently.
And gets over his love for America, which is more important than whoever he's fighting. That's awesome. So we got the Big Boss Man versus Jim Duggan. Slick's theme hits as the Big Boss Man enters. Still doesn't have his own theme. And Johnny No theme over here, Duggan comes out afterwards, but he has a double gimmick of a flag and a 2x4.
How's he so over? The fans love him. Like, they absolutely adore this man.
Wait a minute, Boss Man had his own theme, yeah?
Not at this point.
Yeah, he's still going out, coming out the Slick's theme.
No, I was watching, obviously, the different version to you, lads, because I had the...
Or did he have the...
I'm Coney, Georgia!
No, it was the... So let me guess, I was watching the WWE version.
Yeah, you must have.
And they kept bleeping out WWE as well, so...
Why don't they bleep out the first W, so everyone say, I'm the WF champion?
Yeah.
As opposed to WWE?
do you guys notice, or is it just me, but I thought Bossman, since his last match, had lost a lot of weight.
I'd say he probably lost a bit of weight.
I never realised how huge Duggan is. He's just as big as the Bossman. Well, he's not like as fat as the Bossman, but he's as tall as the Bossman.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. He's a big man. Big man.
Bossman is a lot taller than I remember him being.
Yeah, like he's a huge dude.
6'6", kind of.
Because I always kind of remembered him as kind of being short enough, but very big.
Hmm.
But
he's a large man, yeah.
Duggan cleans house, and holy God, he is over. Just the crowd go crazy.
He really leveled it! Down and out! Whoa.
OC's favourite. Immediate brawl to the outside. Boss man shirt pop open.
Jay's favorite.
What a spot.
A shocking turn of events. An enziguri from the Big Boss Man. Then a rake the back. And then he rakes the back. And then he rapes the back. Big Boss Man, he's in control of the match and he keeps cutting off Duggan's comebacks. And he generally ends up in a rest hold, which is like a turn the head slightly hold.
Duggan was on the canvas and Boss Man climbs up to the top rope to do his monthly botched splash.
Yeah.
But Duggan rolls out of the way, so Boss Man misses him and then Duggan takes a bump anyway. And they're both down. Botched dub spot.
So the finish is the Big Boss Man hits Slick by mistake, but Slick gives the Big Boss Man the nightstick and distracts the ref. But the ref sees the Big Boss Man use it, and the crowd cheer for the DQ win! Hooray! This, Duggan's not in a fucking clean finish.
Is this becoming the Duggan special? The DQ every month?
Unfortunately, this is it.
Can you move up the card with a DQ?
No, you keep get a rematch.
What about Bad News Brown? God, imagine if Duggan fought Bad News Brown.
They did at WrestleMania 5.
Just wouldn't even start.
Did they?
They did, yeah.
Did they?
And yeah. It was like they just went out to the rings and they got their weapons and they're like, and then they double botched each other, and so it's like, oh, nobody wins, nobody wins. We're all to the back, the Roddy Piper special.
Everyone's a loser.
Yeah.
Fuck me,
especially
man.
The fans. So this is a really simple match, but yet the crowd were into it. I can't deny it. Duggan really over, and he gets his heat back by clearing the ring with his 2x4.
And then Bossman starts chucking a couple of chairs at him. It's pretty dangerous stuff. Like, you know, the first one Duggan grabs and kind of put down and sit in it, and then the next one just flies past his head. It's pretty dangerous. Like, I wouldn't be impressed with that. But overall, the match was
shite,
but the crowd again were fucking mental.
I have the exact same thing right now. Woeful match, amazing crowd.
Alright, so we get a montage of quick backstage vignettes of different Royal Rumble participants telling them just a quick bit about themselves. I thought it was funny that the editing, because they left like 2 seconds at the start of each promo, so you could see them wait. Let me tell you something, man. Alright, tonight is the match. What I really liked about these montage of promos is that you can see everyone's talking about a different wrestler. So there's lots of feuds here. So it's not like 30 lads showing up for work for a match.
Yeah.
It's like loads of intertwined feuds here. So we get a Dino Bravo and Earthquake who talk about the Warrior.
And Earthquake just keeps jumping in the background.
He doesn't get gassed. Tell Andre to get off his arse. Demolition, who just talk over each other. Bad News Brown, who cuts a pretty good promo about Beer Betty sharecroppers.
Sharecroppers?
Yeah.
What the fuck's that?
I've no idea.
So do they get beer bellies from sharing crops? Can't imagine Bad News Brown being much of a farmer.
He probably picks a lot of
The internet police are on their way over, Jay.
Dusty cuts a nice promo about Macho Man, and the Rockers cut a very straight, cordial babyface promo about the Powers of Pain. Hercules talks about himself, mate.
He does say the Rumble Royal, though.
I'm gonna win this Rumble Royal today.
Who does?
Hercules.
It's better than the Royal Rumble, though.
This year, kick the new year off with the Rumble! The Royal Rumble! The Royal Rumble! The Royal Rumble!
I'd love a Royal Rumble.
Wait, no, it's terrifying.
Rick the Model Martel just keeps saying, don't touch my face.
He was great.
Yeah, I liked him.
Yeah. He had very odd, like, tan. It's like he only sprayed some tan on his face, but not all over. Like, it was really weird. Tito follows up with the shittest promo ever. I'll do my best shouty face promo.
I think Tito's was so bad that he's, like, the only one that I didn't even bother to write down.
I'm gonna do my best to throw him out! Tito Santana coming out a winner! Arriba!
I just didn't even... Meh. Fuck him. He sucks. Oh, my God.
Like, the difference between him and Martel is huge. Like, Snuka, he cuts a promo in English. How about that? So he says, woo, woo, woo. You know it.
You must be learning... No. I just leave it. Let's not go there.
Akeem and Slick just talks about him. Then the Warrior and... I tried my best listening to him and trying to understand it, but I can't. I can't
just
explain
have
it.
Wow written down, because I, like yourself, I don't know what to write other than this was fucking awesome.
Can I play devil's advocate for a minute?
Sure, go ahead.
Come on, get in there. Go!
I think that the Warriors promos probably are very easy to do, because you don't really need a point, you just talk shit. So I know we all love his promos and everyone loves his promos, but he hasn't put any effort into them, in my opinion.
Do you think he just, like, you know, not hair, I don't know, just...
He goes to local opium den, like...
and just writes whatever comes into his head, whatever he sees.
I don't think he practices or rehearses anything. I think he just goes in and just might have the first line and see where it takes him.
Like, I'll be honest, like, I could never cut a Warrior promo. I couldn't be this creative about it, you know?
Does it really matter what he says, though? You know, like, even if he cut the worst promo ever, but in that way, does he still draw crazy amounts of pay-per-view buys and fan love and everything?
Yeah, he's, like, you know, just under Hogan at this point.
And you know the way he's white hot now, and it doesn't matter if he cuts a good promo or a bad promo. Does that heat taper off, and then because he can't cut a good promo, does that hurt him in the long term?
We'll wait and see.
We'll have to wait
and
see.
Yeah. No spoilers.
Two things to answer that. One of them, the answer is Hogan, and the other one is he had to leave because of the steroid trial. And when he came, he was clean as a whistle, and he looked like, oh Jesus, he.
Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, he fucking dropped about 60 pounds and cut his hair, and it's like, who are you? Who's the renegade over here, you know?
Very good.
So this is the point in the pay-per-view. If you're watching live or a Coliseum Home Video release, you get something different. So, Coliseum Home Video release cut to a pre-tape from earlier in the day where Sean Mooney asked the fans who's going to win the Royal Rumble. Did you get this?
No. No, thank God.
Awesome. I'll tell you all about it. These marks just retort the wrestlers' catchphrases and gimmicks. Hogan's going to win because he's got a 24-inch python. Mr. Perfect's going to win because he's perfect. It's like the stupidest argument you can have. Of note, some girl gets booed for saying Mr. Perfect.
Really?
Like, he's going to win. And everyone just... And some toothless crack whore puts over Jake Roberts.
Brown sauce.
The only person talking sense is a little girl who says Brett's gonna win because he's really neat. And he is. So if you're watching live, at this point the commentators talk about the Rumble match and take a 5-minute intermission. Could have just put on a ladies match, you know?
No.
Or you could just tell people to fucking sit still, it's only a 2-hour show.
They could have shown like highlights of last year's Rumble to, or you know,
bang,
or
right
the
there.
Rules or something. Mm. Bam.
Yeah, so back to more promos. Okay, we got Randy Macho Man King World Savage. He talks about Dusty Rhodes in a great promo. Powers of Pain are there, and Fuji just laughs until someone yells cut. It's great. And then Jake Roberts.
It never ceases to amaze me what the human mind can come up with. I mean, you think of the whole concept. The Royal Rumble this afternoon, you're going to take 30 men, and every 2 minutes, you're going to send somebody to that ring, a fresh man. So you're thinking to yourself, well, what number might be the best? Well, the last number would be the best. But that doesn't really mean anything, because there's still going to be a lot of hungry men out there. And hopefully I'll be one of those hungry men. The man that wins this match is not going to be the man that is the best wrestler, the best athlete. It's going to be the man that will do anything. The man that will take that extra step. Do just a little bit more than anybody else. Maybe sacrifice a little bit more than anybody else. Now me, that sounds just a lot like me.
What do you think, Steve?
I just thought this was fucking excellent. Just amazing. Just the best out of all of these by a mile, if you ask me. I was blown away by how excellent he was.
Yeah, he cuts a great promo, but would his promos be suitable? Him standing in the ring at the start of Raw, belt over shoulder, you have to cut a 10-minute promo, mate.
No, he's because not that.
It's too quiet. Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah, he's not conducive to live promos because he has to contend with the crowd cheering.
Do you reckon Orton is trying to be like this guy in promo wise? Obviously, not in
leagues
life,
behind.
You know what I mean?
But they did wear the blue shirt and the jocks the same.
You know what I mean? Orton is kind of quiet and he doesn't say that much, and he's meant to be the cerebral assassin. You know, like one of those types of characters.
Yeah, could do. He is no Jake Roberts.
No, like, he's not.
Like, Jake, he's very considered opinion. Like, his promo was thinking about how you should approach the Royal Rumble, and he just talks about how most people won't do something extra, and he's going to do something. He's going to sacrifice.
Come and go, I'm going to do a road dog this year.
I thought you were going to say a bag of coke. The Hart Foundation with their shouty face promo. Then Honky says he's going to play 29 hits, and he's awesome.
He was great.
And then the last one, Hulk Beetroot Hogan. Holy shit, he looks like a purse. Like, how brown was he? I don't know what was happening. And he was super jacked as well. Holy shit, man.
This is kind of like peak Hogan time, wasn't it? Like, in regard to his look, this is the Hulk Hogan I remember. As you say, brown, ripped, oily. Yeah.
All right, so it's time, finally. It's the Royal Rumble match. Now, Fink explains the rules. Steve, would you like to explain the rules?
30 men come out every minute and a half, get thrown over the rope, you're out.
2 minutes?
30 men come out every minute and a half. There must be thousands of them in there.
No. 30 out 900 men.
And every 2 minutes, Steve.
Oh, it's 2 minutes?
Yep.
Ah, it actually wasn't.
Well, according to the rules. Rules are meant to be broken. No, they're not. That's why they're in place.
Yeah. And they're not even meant to be bent.
Yeah. Rules are meant to be adhered to.
Yes.
Yes.
Million Dollar Man. Last year, number 30. This year, number 1 comes out first. And then number 2, a bird. It's Coco Beware with his awesome song.
Sorry, just to clarify, the Birdman got Piledriver, yeah?
No, he came out to Bird.
Oh, for me, he came out to Piledriver.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Jeez, Vince is a cheap man, isn't he? Now, the black man no-sells the turnbuckle head spot. Should have known better.
Mm-hmm.
He gets overzealous, though, and he gets dumped out. Now, number 3 is the rocker, Marty Jannetty. I'm flabbergasted. Holy shit, he gets his theme as well? What the fuck is going on here? DiBiase blocks an O'Connor roll and ducks Marty's crossbody, who eliminates himself. And so,
smiling as you do.
Number 4, Jake Roberts, and the crowd go crazy. Absolutely loved the slow, ominous walk he did to the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just milking it, you know, pointing and looking at DiBiase, and the crowd was like,
he's fucking
shit,
great,
man.
Yeah, he's so great.
He was dressed in bright green. It was pretty cool. Number 5, no theme macho. So this was the point where they just stopped playing themes.
In his flower jocks.
Yeah.
What were they all about?
A bit of snooker or something.
Aqua, bright orange, flower. What's going on here? This is madness. Macho madness.
No,
with the fucking state of his jocks. Oh, this is his worst tights ever. Like. Yeah, holy shit. Blinding fluorescent colour. Unbelievable. And the heels work over Jake. Number 6, Roddy Piper, who saves Jake.
And then we get the awesome, as I call it, lethal weapon spot with the two faces that are back to back fighting on legions of bad guys. I thought that was fucking great.
Did you notice at one point the four men in the ring are DiBiase, Jake, Macho and Piper? I mean, that's some lineup.
And this is your mid card.
Yeah.
Holy
and
shit.
Then, to cap it all off, the next man out is
the Warlord. Yeah, the start of this one was really front loaded. Holy shit. So number 7 is the Warlord, and the heels gain advantage with another heel in the ring. So it's kind of like 4-3 at this point. Number 8, Brett in hot pink. And it's not every man for himself, as the faces work together, as do the heels. So number 9 is Bad News Brown. Jake hits a short arm clothesline on DiBiase and goes for the DDT, but Macho clotheslines him over and eliminates him. And then the Macho Man saves the Million Dollar Man, and that sends the commentators into a tizzy.
Yeah. But why? Why, Piper, why? One of those moments.
Yeah.
Number 10, Dusty Rhodes, baby. Massive fucking pop. Awesome. And he eliminates Savage via a back body drop over the top rope.
Savage went down far too quickly, man. Even though the fans loved Dusty, they weren't happy to see Macho go over, really.
Number 11, your boy, Andre the Giant. The commentators get over Heenan pleading that it's not every man for himself, it's every family for itself. Andre immediately hip-tosses Warlord over. And very interesting handbags between Mr. Fuji and Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, why is that anything. You know, why would anyone care? They're two heels, right?
Mm.
I think it's not like you're going to cheer one on over the other.
I think it's more seeing them either pissed off or going to get, hopefully see both of them battered or something like that, you know?
Cornette and Heyman did it at the Great American Bash, 89. Both of them were heels at the time, and the crowd loved it.
I thought, you know, what did you think of Andre in this match? I thought he was okay, a lot better than I've seen him before.
Yeah, Rumble is a pretty easy match, because he just leans in the corner and other people try to throw him over the top.
Yeah, he's doing more than that, though. Like, fair enough, last year's Rumble, I was pretty happy with him.
I think last year's Rumble, he went straight into rest spots and leaning on the ropes and, you know, a foot on one guy and just gasping for breath. But no, he looked much better this time around. Number 12 is the man who boosts the moose roost. It's the Red Rooster.
He comes out to a pretty decent pop. Why would anyone cheer this man on?
It's more a compliment to the crowd.
He's not even booked like a man. He's booked like a fucking farmer. And I'm like,
that's because all of the rooster boosters.
The rooster boosters.
Egging him on. Steve, do you want to call the next bit?
Right. Roddy Piper eliminates Bad News Brown. Then Bad News Brown immediately pulls Piper over the top rope and eliminates him. And I have in brackets next to this, rant. let us go. No. When it comes to the Rumble, this is the most annoying spot they could ever do. There's two referees on the outside. Sorry, I am going to rant. There are two referees on the outside, okay? So it's not like they're looking at what goes on in the ring, because that doesn't matter, because there are no rules during the match. You can do whatever you want. So they only are there to look at the guys who get knocked out and then send them to the back. And they're fucking watching him pull Piper out. And that's it. It's grand. Like, you know, go on, Piper, go on back. No, I don't. No. Sorry, it pisses me off. Really pisses me off.
Yes.
So then they fight to the back.
Yeah, it's the standard Piper finish to a match.
It's also the standard Bad News Brown finish.
Yeah.
And,
Number 13 is Axe. And he goes straight for Andre. Oh, actually, we miss Andre. Eliminates the Red Rooster. And, it's his last pay-per-view as well.
Is this it?
Yeah, he's done.
He's flown the coop.
He's gone by June. He doesn't appear at Mania. And he goes to WCW.
Do you remember they had the clips of Curryman with this nice, you know, romantic music? Do you remember Curryman?
It was hilarious.
Yeah. Don't ask me to do that. Here they come to snuff the Red Rooster, he hardly knew you. Axe handle smash by Axe to Andre. It works quite well on Andre, yeah. This is an odd feud, isn't it? It's actually stemming from last year's Rumble, where Demolition were number 1 and 2, and number 3 was Andre. But smash.
But they didn't make reference to it, so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't really count then. It's a fucking year ago.
Mm. It was Smash that was eliminated by Andre, and Axe was eliminated by Perfect. So Axe and Andre have no beef. Number 14 was Haku. Number 15 was Smash of Demolition.
Brett gives Haku a headbutt and then sells his own head.
I love it.
Mandatory.
And
Haku and Andre are tag champs.
Haha! Very, very good. Yes, Demolition go after the Heenan family, Andre and Haku. And at this point, Ventura mentions another fucking non-pay-per-view tag title change, which is the Colossal Connection. Andre and Haku.
Stupid fucking name.
The Colossal Connection beat Demolition on December 30th Superstars. Now, the Colossal Connection, they were actually formed before the Survivor Series, but they never mentioned it. It's for two reasons. One, because...
no one else.
Yes.
Yeah.
One was for Andre's health, because they want to stick him in the tag, because he can't work as well. And the other one is Bobby Heenan needed a tag team to replace the Brainbusters.
Ah, right.
So, yeah.
Like, there wasn't even a title match on this pay-per-view. Why didn't they have a tag title match on the pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 16 is Akeem, the African Dream. Brett quietly gets eliminated by a flailing arm lash by Dusty.
Was that what it was? Because yeah. I actually missed Brett being eliminated. It's the only one that I didn't, you know, have written down. But
Demolition double clothesline Andre over the top rope to a big pop. Number 17, Super Vi Snuka, no other names, goes straight for Akeem and eliminates him with a running head push.
Yeah. Do you notice at this point the match is kind of going a bit...
Really? Yeah, I made that point. It's like number 12 to 20 are just...
This kind of happens in every Rumble, doesn't it? You know, you get the mid-card as the start and you get the tag in the middle and drags.
This
reminds me of some awesome Rumble. And then the end is always great again.
Number 18, Dino Bravo. And DiBiase is still in. And he's like at 32 minutes at this point in the match, which is awesome. Number 19, Canadian Earthquake. Oh, tag partners, one after the other.
He keeps throwing tantrums in the ring. It's great.
He does a little jump. The state of that move. Oh my goodness.
The whoopsie.
The one when he jumps around them.
Maybe he's just entered the terrible twos or something. Canadian Earthquake makes quick work of Dusty Rhodes, then Axe. It's pretty impressive. Number 20, Jim Neidhart. Yep, the heels and faces swarm Earthquake, and all six men in the ring work together to eliminate him. Dino Bravo helps kind of at the end, but he could kind of play it off that he was trying to attack them as well, so I reckon he could swarm his way out of that one. It's definitely the 80s as DiBiase takes a double atomic drop.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Number 21. Oh, thank God this, like, lull of terrible wrestlers ends.
It was rough there for, like, what, 20 minutes? It was dog rough.
If they didn't eliminate Macho, it would have been grand, you know?
I wouldn't go as far as saying grand, you know, when you've got, like, you know, Snuka and Akeem and Haku and Axe and... the fucking rooster, you know what I mean? Macho can't turn that much chicken shit into chicken salad.
Nice. Number 21 is the Ultimate Warrior, and the crowd erupts. They go fucking mental. I'll just have to play it.
Make it 21 in 5 seconds.
He goes straight for Bravo and eliminates him. Number 22 is the model. Haku eliminates Smash after a back body drop and a nice crescent kick. Number 23, it's Tito Santana, who goes straight to the model.
He's got a good pop. Do you reckon the fans back in the day were really pulling for Tito, or do you reckon they realised, okay, this guy sucks, fucking the model is the future, let's kind of... get behind him.
No, this is like kids in the 80s, man. It's like everyone's a big fan of the big faces. I think he secured like the, you know, the Latin demo as well, you know? Like, I think he was really popular. They actually considered putting the belt on him.
Fuck, the world belt.
Yeah, in the like mid to late 80s.
I would even put the IC belt on him, you know what I mean?
But yeah, here he's very popular. Number 24, the Honky Tonk Man. Neidhart gets eliminated slowly as Warrior and DiBiase scuffle. And Warrior clotheslines $1 Million Man over the rope. Ah, sad to see him go, but holy shit, he was the man of the match in this Rumble.
He was in a long time, wasn't he?
44 minutes, 47 seconds.
I take it that's the longest so far, because in the past two Rumbles, we haven't had any people kind of, you know, last long.
Number 25, Hulk Hogan. Snuka attacks him first. I thought it was really weird, but gets thrown out for his troubles.
Fucking right.
And then he got the big boot, touches and eliminates Haku, who is really dodgy looking. And then Santana gets bowled out and the model escapes elimination. So number 26, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Hogan jobs out the Honky Tonk Man with ease. He just like, there you
yeah.
go. Warrior fucks out HBK and Tito, and the crowd shit themselves as it's just Hogan and Warrior left. Holy shit, man, this is awesome.
Shawn Michaels makes it 5 in the ring,
and Honky Tonk Hogan eliminating the Honky Tonk Man. Shawn Michaels eliminated by the Warrior, and Rick Martel eliminated by the Warrior. Look at this! Look at this!
My God!
Hulk Hogan and the Warrior!
There is not a person sitting down. Everyone on his feet. Look at the eyes of the Hulkster. The eyes of the Warrior.
Whoa! What a matchup this is going to be! The Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan one-on-one!
Hold on to your seats! This place is going to explode!
Whoa! Nobody moves! Again!
Oh my God!
Nobody moves!
Look at this!
Crisscross!
The Hulkster's down! He missed a clothesline!
Oh! And they clotheslined each other!
This, if ever there was any proof needed that these two should main event WrestleMania 6, we had it right there. The crowd were fucking going mental. Absolutely brilliant.
This is the spot of the night. I don't care what happened in the rubbish Ronnie Garbage match anymore. This is the spot of the night. Two of these wrestling gods in the middle of the ring. The fans going mental. Double shoulder tackles. The two of them bouncing off each other. A big dirty crisscross.
Yes! Ah! I'm so hard. What are you gonna do? The two biggest draws in wrestling history, crisscross.
And then, of course, we get another dub spot between the two men.
A double clothesline, and the next dude comes out. So, yes, this was the. Did the fans want to see Hogan Warrior spot? And the answer is hell fucking yes.
Hell fucking yes. I was watching this and I couldn't wait for Mania 6. You know what I mean? I was like, oh my God, if the match is anywhere near as good as this. I have no memory of this match at all, so I look forward to it.
Excellent.
Powers of Pain Anti-Climax of the Night Part 2, when the next man out is Barbarian.
Number 27, Barbarian takes pot shots at both of them.
And while Hogan and Warrior are lying prone on the mat, he drops a couple of elbows, and generally it's a huge letdown.
And then number 28, who arrives before the bell, is Rick Rude, and he goes straight for Warrior. So both Rude and Barbarian try to eliminate Warrior, but Cunt Hogan clotheslines both. So the Warrior... he's a very conscious man.
Oh, no.
And Warrior gets eliminated.
And he has the best reaction ever to someone who just gets knocked out. You know, he goes a bit mental, and then he hits the heels, and then just sprints to the back.
Hogan does the similar spot to Royal Rumble 89, where he eliminates Warrior.
Very good, yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like, I can't... It's almost bordering on heelish.
See, last year at the Rumble 89, Hogan eliminated Macho Man, although they were tag partners and joined babyfaces.
Yeah.
This year, two biggest faces in the company, and, oh, I eliminate you by mistake. Yeah. It's only a game.
Do you think that it would have been better for our business if Warrior had snapped and gotten into Hogan's face, or would that have turned one of them heel and you lose a bit of the face-face dynamic?
No, I think that would be tit for tat. I think it's fine.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, like,
because I wanted him to batter Hogan after he did this. A babyface doesn't do... He doesn't do this. Like, I know Hogan is the biggest babyface in the history of the business, but he wasn't booked like one.
Hulk Hogan, what a guy, eh? Number 29, Hercules. Lovely wind-up punch he did there.
Very fucking Fanta pubes.
What? Number 30, Mr. Perfect, and he goes straight to Hogan. So Barbarian gets a back body dropped over the top rope by Hercules. Why do people run in the Rumble?
Yeah.
Stop running towards the ropes.
Yeah, don't ever climb on the turnbuckle. Don't sprint towards the ropes. You know, don't do springboard moves.
And don't leave your hand over the top rope after you eliminate someone.
Yeah.
All right, so Rude clotheslines and eliminates Hercules. So we got three men left. We got Rude, Perfect, and Hogan. And the fans rally behind Hogan. Perfect unintentionally low bridges Rick Rude and gets eliminated. So we get the Perfectplex, which was no sold. But it was great. The crowd did go crazy for it. Hogan batters Perfect and he catapults him into the ring post and then throws him over the top rope at the like the corner turnbuckle, ass over tea kettle, and eliminates him. It was an awesome looking elimination, have to say. And so Hulk Hogan, master and savior of the universe, one more time, he wins the Royal Rumble.
And he celebrates for about 25 minutes as well. Just like he normally does, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can I just bend your ear for a minute? This is an important piece of information that I only found out when I was doing my homework for this. Mr. Perfect was booked to win the Royal Rumble for weeks leading up to the event. And hours before the show, Hogan said, "No, vetoing it, I'm winning." Despite him being WWF champion and nothing on the line at the Rumble.
Although, in all honesty, Perfect winning wouldn't have done anything for him anyway.
Well, it did nothing for Studd, but Studd was at the end of his career. Perfect was kind of, well, at the nearest peak. So it could have...
Oh, this would cement him as like a serious heel. You know, like winning, that's a big event. Like it would have done wonders for Ted DiBiase before he main evented WrestleMania 4. This would have been huge.
I don't think so. Because the Rumble didn't mean anything.
But like, well, if it didn't...
Just a match.
It would have been... Well, historically it means loads, but...
Yeah, it still looking back now...
It's still much better than not winning it.
Yeah, of course.
Like if Perfect had knocked out Hogan... Last man, that would have been something special.
So, overall though, even though there was a bit of a lull between 12 and 20, I thought it was a great Rumble, really enjoyed it.
I thought it was better than last year's Rumble. I felt that last year's Rumble had no plot or no story, no intermingling feuds. I thought that this year was kind of full of them, even though there was that big lull in the middle.
Mm.
Overall... I thought the Rumble star pair wise was pretty damn good. I mean, there was a bit of a lull, but start and finish is fucking really, really well paced. I thought the stars were quite laid out quite well. However, I don't think I enjoyed it as much as last year's one. I thought it was last year's a little bit more fun. Great setup for WrestleMania 6, and the only thing I would say is there doesn't really seem to be any other big matches lined up for WrestleMania 6. It just really seems to be based on Hogan, where I'm sure at the time people were fucking wetting themselves waiting for that match.
I also have to note that they really, well, apart from Garbage and Heartbreaker and...
So far, that's match of the decade.
But, so apart from Heartbreaker and Hammer Jammer, they really sacrificed the undercard to kind of front load the main events here.
Big time, yeah.
So Hogan celebrates and we get a plug for WrestleMania 6 and we're out. Before we finish up for tonight, I was going to go through Saturday night's main event. Interested? Tough. And now, what do we have? It's the WrestleMania main event tagging against two heels. What could possibly go wrong?
Is this your favourite spot with the tag team dissensions? the TNA special?
How's Tito and Martel doing? Riveting stuff. So, as we were saying earlier, the Genius beat Hogan by DQ thanks to Perfect nailing him with the title. Backstage, he smashed the belt into pieces with a hammer. So Hogan vowed to take revenge the week after the Royal Rumble in a tag match. So let's take a look at Saturday night's main event, January the 27th.
I know there's a problem with Hogan and the Warrior. There's no way they will ever work as a cohesive unit. Now here, you have the ultimate tag team combination. You have brains and you have brawn, Mr. Perfect. The World Wrestling Federation has never seen an athlete like Mr. Perfect. And Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, this is a perfect opportunity for the genius and myself to show the whole World Wrestling Federation and everybody else exactly what you two egomaniacs are made of. The genius already holds a victory right here on Saturday Night Main Event over Hulk Hogan.
The genius was victorious against the mighty Hulkster, and the World Wrestling Federation fell. For a billion Hulkamaniacs who live and die for Hogan saw the genius was triumphant at the bell. They saw their hulking hero as he wallowed in self-pity like the victim of a somewhat heinous crime. And now he has a partner even stupider than he is, so I'm sure he'll be the loser one more time. Mr. Perfect, Mr. Perfect, you're the man who's never wrong. Can you prophesize what we're about to do? By the power of the genius and the world's smartest man, just rely on my incredible IQ.
What do you think of that? Back to you, McMahon.
All right, what a matchup. This is going to be the tag team affair. The genius and Mr. Perfect against the Ultimate Warrior. And the
what about it, Ultimate Warrior?
Anytime you travel 36,000 miles above normal sea level, you will have turbulence.
Yeah.
Anytime you mix two physically, mentally reactive chemicals, there's gonna be boiling and there's gonna be bubbling. But when it settles, that common bond is stronger than anything that intelligence and perfection could ever bring.
When we unite, Mean Gene, mind, body, and soul as one, the Warriors with the Hulkamaniacs, the Dream Team, as the WWE and all the maniacs call it, will become the ultimate nightmare for perfection and the genius.
All right, Vince, let's get back to you.
So it's the genius and Mr. Perfect, and they enter first as a cohesive unit, the Perfect's team, and then the Ultimate Warrior
is
comes out.
Is that what they're called? A cohesive unit?
No.
Okay, because that's not a very good name.
It's even worse than the Colossal Connection. And then the Ultimate Warrior comes out by himself, and Ventura says they're coming out by themselves because they're two separate egomaniacs, and there's no way they can coexist. And then Hogan comes out, obviously, last. The faces murder the heels for about 5 minutes, and the crowd go mental about it. And it's just like, holy shit, this is two main eventers versus two mid-carders at best, kind of thing. Yeah, it's a bit lopsided, this
one. Yeah, this is TNA booking again. Like.
Hogan cleans house and tags the Warrior, who goes and brings the heels into the ring. And then Hogan steamrolls Perfect as the genius brings his metal scroll notepad to ringside and starts writing on it.
It's so awesome.
He like shoos the cameraman away. It's awesome. Perfect uses it to turn the tide and hits Hogan with it and works over Hogan for a bit. Yeah, the genius, he's like Bobby Heenan. He just spent absolutely minimal time in the ring. Then this incredulous spot happens where Perfect hits the Perfect Plex and Hogan completely sells it, so he's out. And it's like, one, two, and then Perfect stops the ref's hand from counting three. And he gets up and says, hey, genius, do you want to pin Hogan? Heels can't be this stupid.
Sometimes heels deserve what they get. Like with Lockdown, they did this shit twice in the one card. Didn't they do it with Matt Morgan? And then again with James Storm, they both had the match won. They decide, no, I'm going to close the door and go back in and lose.
Fucking idiots. You deserve everything you get. Fuck you, D-Lo. So Perfect asks the genius, do you want to get tagged in and get the win? Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Well, everything, obviously. Of course, Hogan counters the jumping, the nothing off the top rope with a big boot. Warrior cleans house, and when he bounces off the ropes, Hogan tags himself in and drops the leg on Genius and steals the pin behind Warrior's back. What a cunt.
What a cunt.
As they celebrate, Perfect and Genius Pearl Harbor their faces, but in the commotion, Warrior clotheslines Hogan, and Jesse Ventura goes mental and plays it up. It's great. Hogan shoves him, and the two go nose to nose, and the crowd go ballistic, because they're like...
Awesome.
And that's how Saturday Night's Main Event goes off the air. Now, this year, they still had a few more shows to build up to Mania this time around. So they kind of do this thing where they turn up the tension between the two. And they officially signed the match on March 7th, the main event. Alright, so let's take it to the Wrestling is Awesome segment.
Awesome! Now, the first step to any erotic conquest is to demonstrate your value.
I am a role model.
Daniel, I mean, he's just awesome. He's the quiet, sensitive type, you know?
Once you've demonstrated your value, you are going to want to ask her out. Once you've asked her out, you move on to E. Engage physically.
Daniel Bryan is a great lover.
Hello, everyone. Mary C.D.
Right, which brings me to the first N. Nurturing dependence. You're going to want to nurture that dependence that she's feeling on you.
Here we go. I am leaving the arena, and I am taking AJ home.
And she'll naturally want to take the relationship to the next level, but you're not going to do that. You're going to do the exact opposite. Pull back, guys. Pull back. Which brings me to the second N. Neglect emotion.
From my point of view...
AJ, shut up.
And that's the perfect time to inspire her.
Just like in life, tonight, I'm going to be in your corner. All you have to do is listen to me.
S. Separate entirely.
We are through. Now get out of my ring. I said get out!
D-E-N-N-I-S. The dentist system. That, my friends, is the key to winning any girl's heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Hogan versus Warrior, champ versus champ at WrestleMania 6. It's going to be awesome. First ever pay-per-view in Canada. Fucking Sky Dome, lads.
Awesome. Edge there in the front row. He's about six.
It's gonna be awesome. It's that time again where we say goodbye. So it's Jay Hunter with Mr. OC.
Yeah.
Steve-O.
We're after.
You stay classy, trolls.
We didn't even have to do that. You could just have Steve go.
Seamless. Actually, hi, Steve. Can you just give noises for just a Foley editing here? Can you say yeah, yeah,
yeah?
Thanks. All right, I have enough to work with. Thank you.